Welcome to the Granite Zero podcast. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
I wasn't sure, but
My brain's not as strong as yours, but
were you a Royal Marine Commando? Couldn't tell.
possibly.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Hey, let me just turn my volume up, otherwise I won't be able to hear you properly. Cool. First up, thank you very much for coming on and giving me your time, especially with
Not a
such
problem.
incredible moustache.
Yeah. I like it. Most of the other lads, they'll say, like, oh, I love the tash. Yeah, my missus and her mates and everybody else who's pretty much female goes, the tash.
Well, it's on your face, isn't it? So
They
it's
don't have to
fine.
grow one.
No, exactly. I always threaten the missus. I'm
Exactly.
like, because I actually grow quite a decent tash, and I can get it to the point where I can start putting the wax in and twisting it like yourself. As soon as I'll literally send her a selfie. I go, look, I can do it, and then I will have it like semi set up, and she's like, don't you dare, you trim that now. I'm like, ah, fuck off, it's my face.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I started off, it was a few years ago, and I had a massive ginger beard. And probably for like for 2 years, I was just growing it and nurturing it. Occasionally, I'd trim it, but you know, it pretty much looked like I was homeless. I had this massive grizzly beard. And yeah, the missus said to me, I don't like the beard. You know, he looks scruffy. Get the beard off. So I was like, okay. And then the didn't say anything about the mustache, so the mustache
Say
stayed.
exactly. You have to be specific with this stuff. If you're going to tell us to do something, you've got to say get rid of it all, or we'll keep something.
So I kept the mustache.
I don't blame you. And some say it's a true testament of testosterone if it's ginger as well. That some say that's what I don't. That's what I've heard. Like, because mine goes very ginger when my beard comes out. So it must just be full of testosterone that we're just like, well, it's ginger, isn't it?
So extra energy, extra strength.
Exactly. So for those people listening, not that I have a huge following, where did it all start for you? I saw that you're a Newcastle fan. Are you from the Northeast originally?
Yeah, I was brought up in the Northeast. My parents moved me there while I must have been about 1 or 2 year old. We've got family up there, so I spent my life up there until the age of sort of 17 when I joined the Marines. So for me, Newcastle was always home, and yeah, like I say, I grew up there. It was the only one team that I was ever going to support. Admittedly, I'm not a massive football fan. My eldest boy, who's 23. He has been a big football fan, played Saturday and Sunday league. Unfortunately, for quite a lot of his childhood, he supported Liverpool. And it was only a few years ago he was saying to me, I don't even know why I support Liverpool. It was just because my mates did. And because we'd go up to Newcastle, see family, if family members had season tickets, they'd be able to get in, sit in the stadium. And he was saying, do you know what? As bad as this sounds, and it was a few seasons ago, so it's not like the glory supporting of just getting into the Champions League. He started supporting Newcastle because of the family ties, and he would go up and he would go to some matches. But and that got me back into supporting Newcastle again because I had someone to support it with. Because
Yeah, I
while he was
get
growing up, I didn't want to be like an opposite team to him. I didn't want to try and because I wasn't that into football and he was. I didn't want to try and hold him back by, oh, you must support this team. But yeah, I've loved having that new connection with my eldest boy now that
Oh, that's nice then. That's nice.
we'll have a
See,
watch it on TV. I mean, admittedly, he goes to football matches all around the world.
really.
He's got into this literally goes online, goes on Skyscanner, he'll pick up the last seat on the plane to get the last seat in a stadium. He was telling me he didn't have enough money to stay over in Italy, so he literally flew over, went to the match, come back on the next flight, and it was cheaper than watching it, getting a Sky package. And he said it was like
That's
unbelievable because he
mental.
was
That is
just last
mental.
minute on everything.
That's yeah. To be fair, like the prices to watch on the telly is ridiculous. You can see like back in the 90s in the noughties when I was growing up, my dad would only just have like the basic Sky package. So he'd be like, no, you can watch the football on Match of the
Yeah.
Day. Match of the Day, mate. We're not getting Sky
Absolutely.
football. He buckled. He buckled because he wanted to watch the football as well. But yeah, that's awesome that you've generated a new connection. Well, I've got a house
Yeah,
full of women.
it's
I've got
good.
a house full of women. So it's fucking pain in the ass. Although they pretend that they like football. My youngest plays football. She's 10, or almost 10, should I say. So she plays but doesn't like watching it. Where my eldest will watch. I think she just likes to sit with me, if I'm honest. She'll watch it with
Yeah.
me, but if it's on, she will be she yeah, doesn't give a fuck. Does not give a flying fuck really about football, but girls for you. So from being up north, right, what made you go, I wanna go south and become the elite of the elite, as some might say.
So
Others
when
might
I went,
argue.
I went to the careers office with a mate of mine, Lee Wilson. He was always mad about joining one of the forces. He was looking to the army, he was looking into the Marines, and he didn't know where the Armed Forces careers office was. I did. I had no intention to joining the forces, but I was like, here, I'll show you where it is. Let's go. So one Saturday morning, I took him off to the careers office, went in there with him. He went off for an interview with, some sergeant major who was in the careers office. I sat in the waiting area. The next thing I know, I was getting told, why don't you just go in with him? So I'm there watching this promotional video, the Navy. They're doing all the different Navy sort of stuff, as I thought it was, because at the time he decided that he was going to join the Navy. And so I'm watching all these different things. There's people jumping out of helicopters, storming beaches, kicking doors down, doing room clearance. And I kept nudging him, going, I could do that. And every time there was something really crazy, Gucci, amazing happening, I'm going, I could do that. That looks easy. I didn't realize I had this guy stood behind me and he tapped me on the back and he's like, how old are you? And I was like, 17. And he's like, get your mummy to sign here and then you can show your mate that you can do this. So from that day, never even heard of the Marines or anything like that. And that was me. I'd big myself up so much to my mate. I was like, right, I'm going to have to do this.
Yeah, you
So I
got to do
signed up,
it. There's no quitting
got
either.
myself onto. No, I got myself onto the potential Royal Marines course down at Lymston, where they do, they beast you for a couple of days and see if you're ready to go on to training. I passed all of that, and 4 weeks later, I was in training, and that's when it was like, oh crap. So
What have I
yeah,
done?
I had no intentions of joining initially, and it wasn't until I got to about halfway through, sort of week 15, 16 or so, I stopped seeing it as a challenge, and I'm more so as this is going to be my career. So it was sort of while I was learning on the spot, that's when I was kind of thinking, yeah, I'm kind of enjoying this now.
Yeah,
So
because
that's how it all started, really.
so there was no like previous family ties to the Marines or anything like that, or any military, or
Not for the Marines, no. My dad and all my uncles, my dad's passed away now, but he had done his national service. And same with his brothers. A couple of his brothers stayed in the army. And I didn't find out how much the family had this army sort of background until I joined up. Dad never spoke about it because my dad was old enough to be my granddad. I'm the
Oh,
youngest mistake, basically. For me, I saw my dad. He was a retired builder. He was a shop owner, and I never saw him as his previous life as he was in the army. So yeah, for me, it was like he got all these old pictures out, and he was telling me all these things, and it's like I never knew any of this.
it's
So
amazing what
I
you
only
find
found that
out.
out later on in life. Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, that is.
But
That's
from me, I've always seen it as like I've got two boys. I've got two boys, and I've always said to my wife that I'd never push them into it. If you're going to join the Marines, you've got to be, ready to put everything into it 100%, so you can pass it. So for my boys, it's always been whatever they want to do, push them towards what that is. But yeah, we haven't carried on this tradition.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Like my eldest wants to become a paramedic, and I sort of gave her a bit of advice where I said, "Why don't you look at either joining the Navy, Army, or the Air Force? Because then you can
Yeah.
get the training paid for instead of
Fair
going
one,
to
yeah.
uni, instead of going to uni and then being in debt." I was like, "That way, you'll get paid. You can go through all the training. If you don't like it after however long, you come out
Yeah, there'll be a return of service, but at the same time,
and
it's all paid for, isn't it?
exactly. And she was like, "But I don't want to join the military." I was like, "But think about it." I went, "Well, apart from what's going on at the minute, there's in well in sort of terms, there's no we're not at war with anyone at the minute.
No.
This may all change, but." So I was like, technically, we're in peacetime. So when she's only, well, she'll be 13 in June, so she's 12. By the time you're ready to join up, if you want to join up, I went, there probably won't be anything going on. So you'll fly through your training, you'll do all that. If you want to then keep going and stay in, or even well, you can even get attached to, like fucking, I don't know, Kent Ambulance Service or whatever. Wherever you may be, you can get attached to these NHS services and help out. It was like, so you'd still be doing the same sort of job and you're getting paid instead of being in debt. And she was like looking at me as if to go, "What are you talking about, Dad? Stop trying to push me into the military." I'm like, "Fuck, I'm not trying to push you."
Yeah, a 12-year-old is probably not bothered about debt as well.
No. She's like, "I don't know what you're talking about, whatever. Can I get this app off the fucking iTunes?" Fucking hell. But yeah, I definitely see your point as well, where if they want to do it,
Yeah.
then yeah, I will show you exactly what you need to do, how you need to go about it. It's like when I joined up, my dad and my granddad were both in the Air Force as well. So when I joined up, my dad was always pushing me, get a trade. If you're going in the Air Force, get a trade. Me being an idiot,
Yeah.
I was like, no. I wanted to be a PTI originally because the Air Force was the only ones that you could do it straight off the bat. Because I'm not the best at tests, so I completely flunk the aptitude test, and the only next physical in my head, the next physical job was the regiment. For my sins, I decided to that was it then. That's what I want to do. My dad was like, "No,
Yeah.
get a trade," and I was like, "No, I've seen the promotional video now. I've seen the 5 mile of death."
They've sold it to me.
Yeah. But in my opinion, it was the best thing I ever did. And yeah, even I only did 5.5 years, but in my head, I should have done more. Family reasons is why I didn't. But you know,
Yeah.
that's just the way things are. I went to the desert a couple of times, had a good a jolly boys outing. And yeah, and here we are in a shed. But nah, genuinely though, is I all the talk about mandatory service and all that sort of stuff for the kids growing up. On one hand, I think it's great. On the other hand, I look at the government and I'm like, would I fight for this government now? Probably not. In my opinion. That could take an absolute twist if we went down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't understand what you're saying. You know, you look at it in two different lights where, you know, you could see it as everyone would, you know, gain something out of it. And then, we as a nation would gain something out of having, you know, more people in our forces. But then the other side of it would be back when you were serving, if you were serving with some of the idiots who would get dragged into this who don't want to be there, would you want to
Totally
serve
agree.
alongside that?
Totally
It's like,
agree.
no.
It's
Would
yeah,
you want them to have your back?
it's the soldiers and whatnot that volunteer. They volunteered for a reason because they want to do it. If I'm told that I have to do something, I'm like, that fuck's sake, I'm not fuck off. Why have I got to do that? It was bad enough when I was serving and I wanted to be there getting told what to do, but
That's it. Even enforced fun isn't fun, is it? When it's like everyone's going to go on this fun day out, it's like, I don't want it.
I like that. Forced fun. Yeah, there was too much of that. Well, we'll all go out, but there's an itinerary for us going out on the piss. Oh, fuck off. You can stay at home, mate. What was it like for you then, leaving the family up north and going all the way completely the other end of the country? Is it a difficult transition?
No. I don't know if this is just sort of part of my personality. It's very much sort of drop all emotion to it. And it was just, I joined up, sort of wave family goodbye. There was mum, dad. Instead of trying to count them all up from three different marriages of both parents, there's a handful of us brothers and sisters. And I just sort of see you later sort of thing, because I was the youngest. So they'd all grown up, started having families of their own. I was the last one to sort of leave the nest. And I'd stay in touch with them. Back then it was 98. I was just getting a mobile phone. Not many people had a phone. So I'd still stay in touch with them. It was a great way of getting around the world and seeing things and doing things, because coming from a large family, I'd never had a family holiday or anything. My first family holiday was going on a med tour with 4-2 Commando. And it was like, wow, what's this? 15 different countries we're going to in the next 6 months. Yeah, living everywhere. it was a great thing. And, I'd still go home on leave and I'd see my parents and I'd see my sisters. But I jumped in with both feet and enjoyed every second of it. I met my wife down in Exeter where we train. And for me then, life and in the corn life with sort of the family became all down the south. So I stayed down here. That's where I am now. I'm in Devon still.
And I
stayed down here. My wife, my kids, her family, whenever I went away, she had a family around her. So we tried to make it so instead of me moving the family around, I tried to stay southwest based if I could. And the only real time when I got drafted up to a 4-5 Commando, I joined them in theatre after sailing out for Telec 1. And by the time I got there and we had our play in the sound pit, I then came back and I was drafted again, but I was drafted back down here. So I never actually joined them in Scotland. I didn't step foot into Scotland from getting a Scottish, Scotland draft. So I was happy with that.
Yeah,
I had that tick in the box to say I'd been there and didn't have to go back for a while.
So
I managed to bounce around 40 Commando and 4-2, which were Taunton and Plymouth based. So again, not too far, commutable from at the time it was Exeter, Exmouth. Now I'm in Honiton, which is just outside of Exeter. So it was all within the same area to leave the wife and kids here.
Beautiful area as well.
Yeah, definitely. Unless it's raining, and then it's a shithole.
That's the same with everywhere, though, isn't it?
Yeah, everywhere.
So, I was Suffolk based, 15 squadron, and it was a decent squadron when I got there, and I was praying to the gods that I wasn't going to get 51 squadron in Lossiemouth. I was like, I don't want it. I do not want to go to Scotland. Yeah. And then I met my now wife. Just after I finished basic training, we were going through what was known as the field gunners phase, which is where we learn all the big weapon systems and what have you, and become from a recruit to a proper regiment gunner, you could say. And then basically, soon as we landed on squadron, it was right, get ready. We've got pre-deployment. We've got Telec to go to. So we went to getting ready for Telec 13, which we were the last foot on the ground, as it were. But yeah, the problem was, at that time, we were just boyfriend and girlfriend then. She was down in Kent, I was in Suffolk. And then before Herrick, before we went out to Afghan, that's when we were engaged, and she was getting ready to move to Suffolk. And then as soon as she got into Suffolk, she was on her own, and that's when a lot of the problems sort of started within like, we were bickering because we were both stressed. I was getting ready to go on tour again. She was at home with a newborn. Her mum and dad were in Kent. My mum and dad were in Hereford. It was like, Jesus Christ, we're all over the shop here. And that's when I took the decision. I was like, it's either I stay in, lose my family, or I come out and move down south, and then we can fix everything. And that's what happened, basically, which was good in the long run. I had a few demons when I left because of how I left. In my head, I had a lot more unfinished business, but it is what it is. Well, one thing we do have to sort of bring up, I hope you don't mind, because obviously
No.
you're walking around on one leg.
Yeah, it's not what
To put
everyone
it
thinks.
to put it bluntly, we,
Yeah, that one.
yeah, there it is.
Got a few here actually, but yeah. Oh. It's not what everyone thinks. And I was in the Marines for 17 years. I wasn't injured in battle like many people will think. What happened with
I'm
me?
I got to admit, I assumed it was.
I had a few near misses. I had a couple of years of where I truly believed that somebody else was looking over me, and I, was truly invincible, bulletproof or anything like that. I had near misses where I was shot in the back. Armored plate stopped it, so
Bloody
straight
hell.
away, happy days.
Yeah.
Wall in front of me was RPG'd in a compound. So now I'm under the rubble, sort of getting picked out. As we're getting out of there, the guys were calling in mortar fire on our position in, figures
Jesus.
30, whatever it was. So we're trying to get out of there, really big steps. Mortar fire coming in, walls getting sort of claymored down and everything, just clouds of dust everywhere. And not a single injury from everything that was happening there. Vehicle in front of me on a convoy got blown up. Vehicle behind me on a convoy got blown up. Two different convoys.
Jesus.
And you're
There's
thinking all these different things.
definitely
I had a
something touching
motorbike
you on
accident.
the shoulder.
Oh, yeah. I come back from that tour. I had a motorbike accident where the back wheel blew up on my bike. I'm flying in the air, tumble turn, land on my back, skidding around everywhere. I've taken elbows or skin off the elbows and knees, taken a chunk out of my shoulder. Haven't broken anything, but I've got bits of skin missing. That all heals. I go up the Himalayas the following year, and I get to six that we was testing how far we could get without sort of any acclimatization and any breathing apparatus. I think it was about 6,000 meters above sea level, and it was hard to breathe. I mean, you should really have oxygen anywhere from 5,000 meters onwards. But yeah, it was getting really difficult to breathe. I remember having to crush the ice in my camelback, trying to take a sip. And as I was trying to sip it, I was thinking, I can't swallow, still can't swallow. And I had to sit on the floor thinking, I can't breathe. That's why I can't swallow. I was thinking, oh my God. And all these things happened probably in the space of 2, 3 years. And then I went to Norway training and I slipped over and broke a leg.
Oh,
And
fucking
that was
hell.
it.
Oh, no. No.
As I slipped, the foot carried on sliding forwards. And then stopped sort of on a dry piece of concrete. I tumbled with it, but as I'm spinning and the foot stayed still, I managed to rotate it and break it up the leg in three
Oh,
different zigzags. Because if you
hell.
imagine, because the foot stayed still and it twisted to the point where it broke in that zigzag. The
Jesus
ankle
Christ.
dislocated. It was quite complex the way it had broke. Had a mountaineering boot on, and as I lifted the foot up, and as it was up there, the foot just hung like a limp wrist. And it was like, right, yeah, that's definitely broken. And that's what was the cause of it. That was back in 2008. And from there, I thought straight away, I'm going to have some surgery. I'm going to have some rehab. And, 6 months to a year, I'll be back in doing everything. But it didn't work like that. When I dislocated the ankle, the shin bone and the foot ground together. That took a little bit of like bone off both of them. And when they both tried to compensate, growing to like that little bit on the shin and that little bit on the foot, there was nowhere to move the foot within the ankle. I couldn't like raise the foot up because it wouldn't work as an ankle. So they went in, and there was 11 surgeries to try and fix this ankle, to the point where they decided they were going to fuse the ankle. And I don't know if you know, with fusion, it's basically the screwing bones together.
Yeah,
So
yeah, yeah.
my shin and foot was getting screwed together. And then I had what I felt like was this golf club of a leg and a foot. Couldn't move the foot at all. I could move the toes, but I couldn't move the ankle in a way that you could use an ankle. So now I needed to decide, when you bend the knee, you need to bend the ankle. So do I bend my toe at the same time? And everything was odd. I had to use crutches. I went I must have been about 13 stone, and I went up to about 22 stone from just couldn't be active anymore. Walking everywhere on crutches. In fact, it wasn't 22 stone. I think I was 17 stone. I lost 22 kilograms after that. That's why I was thinking 22. But I got to this point where I decided, this isn't me. You know, I'm not active. I'm not able to do the things I want. And I said to them, you know, it still feels like a fracture. I had this massively inflamed ankle. And I just said, right, the next thing for me is, this isn't working. Get it off. And I was like, just amputate. I'd seen mates who sit on mines and, you know, a year later they were running. I was thinking, I've been going through this for 6.5 years now. Let's just get rid. You know, so the 12th operation for me, when they finally decided that my fusion hadn't worked, they were like, we could fuse it again. Or, and I was like, yep, amputate, get rid of it. And they were like, you're very keen. I was like, yeah, get rid, you know, let me move on.
Yeah.
And that's what I needed, because I'd seen the other lads do the same.
Yeah. It's detrimental to yourself having it fused, because as you said, you can't move as well as that you should be, especially if you're an active serving Royal Marine Commando. You're supposed to be able to move about.
Yeah. And little things used to get me as well, because while I was downgraded, and they do they'll still grade you on your annual report. I don't know if they still call it a rules or anything like that. But so you get this annual report to say how well you are suited to the job you're doing. So as a Marine, I was doing, I was then as an acting corporal. So I'm not even a substantive corporal, but there I am as an acting corporal doing a sergeant's job and a colour sergeant's job. But really, my rank is Marine. And when they wrote the report, they kept saying not fully fit, or if was fully fit, would be able to. And I was like, can you stop saying fully fit? Because even when I was sat on my arse and I was putting on some weight, I was still active. I still had heart and lungs that were fitting for me.
Yeah,
it was like,
yeah.
I am fit, I'm injured. There's a difference. And I don't like you referring to it as not fully fit. And it's like, it just gripped me every time. And maybe that's one of the reasons why, as soon as I had the amputation, I thought, right, now I need to show everyone and prove to everyone I can be fully fit again. And that's where it did go off the rails, because I decided that not only do I need to be fully fit, I need to be the best I could possibly be. And that's where, over the last few years, I have pushed it maybe too far. But how far is too far? And you never know until you get there.
Yeah.
Or you
well,
try.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And obviously that's taken you to the Invictus Games, did it not?
Yeah, I was already pushing things before then. I was at Headley Court. I was on a rowing machine with one leg. I hadn't been fitted for a prosthetic by then, and I was just in my mind, I was just rehabbing, and there I was blasting back and forth on this rowing machine just on one leg. I was having to try and hold my core to hold, because you haven't got a limb to hold you in on one side. Drooping on one side, I'm having to hold myself, and I'm trying to keep all the technique that I can. And I kept having this lady come up to me, and she'd lift my head and she'd say, oh, you need to be sat here, you should be focused there. And as I'm trying to do it, I kept thinking, who is this woman? You know, there I am just trying to have a go. And she's like, this.
Hey, leave me to do it.
Well, I finished what I was doing. And as I finished what I was doing, I turned around and I noticed she had the GB flag on her chop, and it was GB Talent Scout for Team England.
Got you.
And I was like, well, she was there looking around some of the disabled lads Headley Court who were active, because, I mean, they were scouting outside the box of different events and thinking, who else is active can we see? I was invited to go to a talent scout event where they were going to test us for what your maximum power was. So there was these different ranges that they wanted you to be in. What could your split be? Or what was your best split? And I went there and it was like, sign your details down. We'll, you know, get you forwards for some training. Next thing I know, I've got GB trials, and I'm rehabbing in the military at Headley Court, but in one sense, while I'm injured, I'm now being pushed towards, you could be an athlete.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay. So they sent me away to Sochi for the Winter Games, for the Winter Paralympics. I was there living in the Paralympic Village with the athletes. But what it was to do is they were trying to get me ready for Rio in 2016. And they were saying that if we can get you to look around Sochi and go, wow, this is the opening ceremony, the closing ceremony. This is so you get the Disneyland effect of everything's great. And then when you go to your event, you just go, right, laser focused in. That's what I've got to do. Never mind any of this opening and closing ceremonies and any of the fun. Eat, sleep, and breathe. Everything to do with, will it make the boat go faster?
Yeah, and then a bit of sports psychology going on there.
Go for the goal. So they wanted us to go there to just be in awe of everything and then get on with the job. But I come back from there, and the Invictus Games was announced by Prince Harry, and he was saying that it was going to be coming to London. And I looked at my coach, and she was going, "We're talent scouting for your, like they were picking the team, and they were saying we were going to ask you and a few others, do you want to be on the rowing? They're going to do an indoor row." I was like, "Sign me up for that." Previous to sort of doing rowing at Headley Court and rowing for GB, sort of. I'd massively been into indoor rowing at the 2000 meter championships and trying to beat world records for marathon distance. So when it was like, you could do this as an event, it's like, sign me up. You know, this is I'm all over there. This.
Yeah.
But
I don't blame you.
I went there with a massive sort of I don't know what way to put it. I felt confident in my own abilities. I don't want to say I was, big headed, but in my head, the times that I was putting out, I was chasing the world record times. And I was thinking, I definitely want to do this. You know, I'm happy. I was there just saying, I am going for gold. However, there was a guy who was on my team as well, Jordan Beecher. Absolute machine of a bloke, slightly taller than me, slightly bigger than me. He was in the Paras. I'm in the Marines. So straight away, while we're training, we're pushing the best out of each other. Everything we do, sometimes I'm a second better than him. Sometimes he's a second or a meter quicker than me and vice versa. And absolutely, the combination of us training together was we would always push each other to do that a little bit further. And it was good fun. I mean, as you know, with Paras and Marines, there's a lot of banter. But at the end of it, we were good mates. And when we went to the Invictus Games, we were both on any other day, we were both in gold medal positions. And it was like, right, this is going to be great. And on the day, I was in heat one, he was in heat two. And it's like, I wanted to race him. So I went out there, give it my absolute utmost best. I won my heat. And then as I went off the stage and he came onto the stage to do his bit, I told him my time. I went, this is what I got. Because in training, if you've done your absolute best, doesn't matter what you got. And I just, in my head, I wanted to be able to push him too, thinking, right, that's what I've done. He beat me. But
motherfucker.
I got the silver on that. And it was the 100 meter, I think it was a 500 meter, and we did a team event. And the team event, we got gold. The two sort of where I went against him, sort of, I say virtually because we were on different heats, he beat me, and hats off to him. You know, I gave him an absolute blinder of an event, and to beat me, like I said to anyone who's beat me in the past, you're going to have to earn it. I'm not just going to, go easy. And really enjoyed the Invictus Games. Apart from at the time, and you'll understand where I'm going with this, I'm away in London. I've been away with the Marines for many years. It was always I'm away from family. But this time I'm leaving the Marines. I'm getting medically discharged. And my wife and kids were seeing it as I'm now choosing sports and events that I'm choosing over being drafted. So I was choosing to be away in London, choosing away to be away in Russia, choosing to go to these different events. My training was going to be in Caversham. So that's nowhere near Exeter. So it's like I'm choosing to be away there. So it was getting to a point where I need to start choosing, do I want this thing that I was never born disabled, and I never had this dream of being a Paralympian.
Yeah,
but then it was put onto me where, you are minutes away from getting onto, or you're the next step away from being in the boat for the team at Rio. And because it was so close, it was kind of, it was just around the corner. It was like, should I push for that? And coming from a military background, you do, you push every last bit you can. And I had this end goal of I could do it. But what I needed to see was, do I want that end goal of having this, you know, glorious career of being in you know, an athlete and no family? Or do I want the family that, you know, that I want? And that was never a dream. Well, what I decided was I was no longer going to go to the next trials. We went for a meeting. I spoke to the coaches and I said, you know, thanks a lot for everything you've done so far. I was still being paid by the military, so I had no funding or issues or anything like that. So I said, you know, this is where we part ways. You know, I'm off, you know, see you later. I still to this day think they're a bit shocked by that, because we were all so close and we were all so sort of close, and the team were close to the event as well. And since then, and since leaving it, the guys who were still in, I know that even though they were a lot better than the team and the squad who were selected. A name I'll put out there, and I mentioned before, Jordan Beecher. I personally think he was the best, if not sort of one of the best sort of two in the world at the time. And on the day, he didn't get into the boat. Now, if he didn't get into the boat, and he was the best in the world, in my mind. Why?
Yeah.
And they put it down to, they had a four-man squad. It's two women, or a four-person squad, two men, two women in the boat. It's mixed. And they'd already won the cycle of, say, the world champs, the European champs, the Paralympics. And then they come round again, and it was like, what do we do? Do we swap a gold medal-winning championship sort of squad and put somebody who is physically and technically better individually on the day? And do we put him in, and how will that gel? So for me, the potentially the best person in the world didn't get in. And did I want to sacrifice family for going there for something that didn't happen?
Yeah.
So I feel like I made the right decision to say enough's enough, I'm gone. And sports is ruthless. And looking back on it now, I mean, I've seen it said so many times in the past where they say you've got to be so selfish to be an athlete. At the time when I heard this on TV, I've seen a few documentaries where they say that, and I just thought, no, you're not selfish. You know, you're just committed and you're focused. But you do. You've got to be so selfish, because if it doesn't make you fitter, faster, stronger, and better at what you're doing, everything else goes out the window. Your holidays become things that you resent, because it's like, that's going to take time away. 2 weeks away in, say, Disneyland will make you no faster, but it'll no better. It'll definitely put you back weeks, if not months, of training. So
that's a big thing
from the family start becoming resented sort of things.
Definitely. And I'm quite close with a few mixed martial artists, Mason Jones being one of them. And you can see it when you're talking to him, or if I go back home, and which is only about an hour away from where he lives, when I go back to Hereford and I send him a message saying, do you fancy meeting up for a chat or whatever? And he's like, oh, I would, but I've got like four training sessions today. I'm like, in my head, I'm like, well, just take one of them off, mate. But he is going, he wants to get back into the UFC, he wants to then progress his career even further, hopefully fight for a title. And I'm like, I just want a coffee, mate. You know, do you know what I mean? It's like, I totally get it. I totally get it. And you have to have that sort of focus.
Yeah.
And even back when we were going through training, you had to have that focus. I was quite lucky when I was going through training that I didn't have a girlfriend or a missus or anything like that while I was going through training. Because I think I would have probably just gone, I'm going. Because I remember when I first got to depot for, and it was the first 4 weeks just before Family's Day, and even then I was like, I hate this. I hate it. And to be fair to all the instructors, they were like, Tomo, it's only been 4 weeks, mate. After this, you'll get used to it, and you'll continue. And they were completely right. As soon as I had the family's day, saw my family for a weekend, went back to depot, I was like, right, mindset's changed now. I've got this goal to get to. And I think that's where a lot of similarities between the military and elite sort of athletes are, because you have to be selfish at times, like going on tour. Like your missus and your kids will be like, no, you can't go, Dad. We're at home. It's like, no, there's a bigger thing going on here. We have to go and do this, or we've been ordered to go and do this. Yeah, which is, again, doing a bit of a circle there, which is why I had to leave, because literally I'd done three tours. I did Telic and two Herricks, and we were getting ready to go back out again. And I was like, probably I can't do a fourth, especially with my youngest.
That's
my youngest.
You were making your missus a single parent, really, weren't you?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And sorry about that. I think my connection just literally just went, I'm going to emerge and we'll start again. But it's still going. It's still recording. But yeah, you're spot on, leaving him to be a single parent.
Yeah, definitely. And I can't even say what was worse. Just before you left, how bad everyone, with all the bickering and all the sort of arguments, or if it's just as you come back. Because just as you leave, it's like you don't want to argue with anyone, because you don't want to leave any sort of lasting memory of you of this argument. And then when you come back, it's like, don't you tell them off. You haven't even been here. You haven't seen naughty.
Yes. And,
like,
know exactly
you
the feeling. Kind
of, you want to go and help, but I don't need your help. I know how to do this. You're saying I can't do it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You haven't been here for 7 months. What do you know?
Yeah. So yeah, I had to tread carefully. And like, I think it was even on a training sort of say tour that I went on with the Navy. We went down the Antarctic, and my little boy was about 1 year old when I came back, about 6 or 7 months later. He went from having, say, a bald head, no hair, to I came back and there was this little boy walking around with lots of hair. And
yeah.
My wife was at home at the time I came in. She was there with a friend as well. Her friend also had a kid. So I was looking, thinking,
is that one mine? Or
little boy with lots of hair, is that mine? And it's crazy to think, sort of, that 6, 7 months, and you're kind of there going,
I know what you mean.
It shows you how much you miss them, how much of that sort of early stage of their life that you're missing
definitely.
Out on.
Definitely. When I went to Bastion, I got stitched up by the squadron when I went to Bastion. Fuck, still fuming now. So my boss, because I was on HQ, luckily, because it was my last tour, they put me in the safe space. So they put me on HQ. Yeah. I was a radio biff, and they asked me, when do you want your R&R? And I said, can I have it halfway? I went halfway through the tour.
Yeah.
And they went, but you've got a little girl at home. Do you not want Christmas? I was like, no, I don't want Christmas. We only came out in November. I don't want to go home in December, because then when I come back, I've still got 6 months. And they were like, oh yeah, don't worry, Tomo, we'll sort you out. I was like, cool. All the R&Rs came out. Tomo, here's your R&R dates. And I was like, what's this? And they went, oh, we could only get you near Christmas. I was like, near Christmas? You said Christmas or when I asked, which was halfway through. And they were like, yeah. And I went, I come back on the 10th of December. I went, it's nowhere near Christmas. I was like, I even missed my missus's birthday. Did I miss her birthday? Or did I come back on her birthday? Either or. I can't remember if I was leaving on the 7th, which is her actual birthday, or if I left on the 10th. But anyway, it was early
December. I missed
December.
Everybody in the family's birthday, literally everyone's birthday. And when I came back, it was my birthday, and I felt like such a cock.
Yeah. But going back to what you said about kids. So my daughter, she was still a baby when I left. She didn't really know daddy was going, but daddy was going. I came back, she was a fully grown toddler. Like, even the whole her face changed. I've got a comparison picture. I'll put it up when I upload this, but it's madness. Like, she was a baby and then toddler. It was like, I don't. And we had such a good connection before I left. I used to do bath time where we would fucking sing songs in the bath. Well, I would sing badly, but she would splash around. That was our time. Bath time was our time. When I got back, she barely did. She was like, who is this randomly tanned
man? Who
are
you?
It's like, fuck's sake. It was horrible. And that was one of the big reasons. Like, I didn't want to miss her growing up. Like, when I was growing up, my dad went away, but he was, my dad was a parachute jump instructor. So when he went away, he went to like California and fucking South Africa and places like that parachuting. But still, dad was away. So I was like, I don't want that. I want her to have that bond with me. And generally, it took us years to get the bond back. But she's my little shadow now, my oldest. She's like, always wants dad time. But yeah, for the longest time, it was mum, 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 mum. Constantly, I was like, what about me? I didn't help because, as I said, I had some fucking horrible demons that took hold, and I was just a grumpy horrible bastard for ages. Horrible. I can say it now. I was a horrible bastard. Not
yeah, same here. I was horrible.
It was as though I was a completely different person. I wasn't Sean. And I wasn't Tomo. I was just this new creature that appeared that didn't really want to go out and have a beer. If I did have a beer, I'd have it on my own. Didn't really want to socialise with, because I'm quite lucky. I've got two of my best mates from Squadron literally live down the road. So I've still got a bit of military banter still going on between us. I didn't really want that. The kids, if they... Even little stupid fucking things, like drop a spoon on the floor, I'd lose my shit. Like, it would be like World War III in my house because they dropped the spoon. It's like, who is this guy? Who is he? Don't like him. Let's get him fixed. And we did, eventually. we're still on that recovery road, but...
Yeah, it's a long road, but you get there.
Yeah, yeah. You do a lot of work with Rock to Recovery, don't you? Which is a good segment to slide into.
I've done some different events in the past, So while I was going through Hasler Company, which is a rehab based in HMS Drake in Plymouth, one of the guys who set it up, Jamie Sanderson, he was suffering from PTSD. The military didn't really help with much sort of counselling, and there was no real help there. And he'd left, and then he came back as to give us a talk. He was a speaker. So there we were. There was over 30 of us. We all sat around, and Jamie came in and was like, "Why did Jamie just come back in?" And he was there to talk to us about Rock to Recovery that he'd set up. Didn't know he was about to set it up or anything like that. It's something that, you know, it's his little baby. And he set this up because, you know, his love of music and rock and having something to sort of get people, you know, together. And also there's the opposite side of rock there, where it's like, you know, you can be hard, you can be somebody's rock. They were going out climbing, another form of rock, and all these metaphors with it. And he was saying, you know, to try and get us all together and do something, talk about it, and try to help each other along the way. So from the off on, it was like that. There was a few events that would happen. I think we had I'm trying to think of the name of it now. Basically, they set up a gig where there was musicians playing, and we had this festival. We'd go out doing sort of different sport events. And what I've got into recently over the last few years is the rehab triathlon, which happens down in Plymouth each year. And I normally sort of go down there with one of my yellow sort of rock recovery tops on. And it's a swim, a cycle, and a row. And people from all tri service get there. As well as they get people like Yanks and the Dutch and trying to think of other nations together. It's basically that some of the other athletes from the Invictus Games, people will turn up for this event. And a lot of the time, There'll be different stands there where you've got the Help for Heroes, you've got the Royal Marines Charity, you've got Rock to Recovery, you've got different sort of people there helping out as well. And they're there to sort of give you any advice. Also, there's fundraising on the side, which, why not? And I sort of get involved there. They do a rugby, like a rugby. Trying to think what it was. It's like a rugby tournament they do each year as well. And I sometimes go to that. And a lot of the time, it's just meeting up with some of the lads who used to serve with. And because you all serve and then you go elsewhere in the UK, and then yes, you can go on social media and you can chat with people and you can message them, but it's nice to have an event there you can all get back together again. So, yeah, I try to get involved. So I've done a few charity events where I've raised money for Rock to Recovery myself. When it was lockdown, I started off. I normally do like I'll have like a daily goal. There'll be a weekly, fortnightly goal. Then there'll be like a monthly, 6 monthly, a yearly. And during lockdown, I dreamt up this crazy idea. I was 39-year-old, and I decided that in the indoor rowing, the different age categories are 30 to 39 and then 40 to 49. So I thought, right, all of the different records that are out there, I'm going to beat every single record, whether it's the shortest distance, the middle distance, some of them, it's like 100, 500. It might be a minute, might be, 30 minutes. There was short, middle, and long distance, all the way to marathon. And I was like, I want to challenge or beat every single record in the 30s, as it was, 30 to 39. And then the day that I turned 40, do it all again. But I don't want to just beat the records of what the 40s were. I wanted to beat the records of the 30s too. So it was like improvement and show that age was just a number and I could do this. So this was a 2-year challenge to beat, which meant that every single day, and I had loads of time on my hands in lockdown, so it was like a 2 years of pushing my utmost limits. Well, this turned even bigger because I bought myself a ski erg as well. So it looks like a rowing machine stood up and you're
I know.
pulling the handles down. So rowing's, it looks like you're pulling things, but you're really pressing with your legs, and it's a tiny bit of pull at the end. So here I am as an amputee, and I'm challenging myself with a sport where you're pressing with the legs. On the skier, you stood up and you're pulling down, but there's also an element of squat with it. Again, can't really squat because I've only got one leg. So my technique was pull down and arch with your back. That's never going to be good, but I managed to do it so many times over. Now I was not just beating the records there, I was setting each record that was. I think it was 11 different, or sorry, 13 different records, and 11 of them I was setting.
Jeez.
It was a crazy amount of, and then from that, it was kind of like on each of these records I'd set, the following week I'd beat them again, or the following week, and within the 2 years, there was close to, I think on the ski erg, I think it was about 30 odd records I beat. And I think on the rower over the time, it was about maybe 40, 50 record. There was that many. I mean, it sounds cocky as hell. I'd lost count of how many times,
Be
because
cocky.
it would be like, beat one this week, beat one the next. And it was unbelievable. But I was at that point where everything I tried, I would absolutely push it to its limits. It was kind of pass out or throw up fitness. And this is where I would do charity events for Rock to Recovery. And each week, with myself and my wife, we'd have these different challenges and we'd have to do different distances. But I'd incorporate this into my training that I was doing. And we'd have all these different charities that we were helping. There was Mind, there was the Living Miserably charity. I can't think what it's called now.
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about. I can't think of the
Yeah.
name either. Is it Calm?
Calm, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's Calm.
Campaign Against Living Miserably, that's
Yes,
it.
that's
Campaign
it.
Against.
We love an
Yeah,
acronym.
so a lot of the times it was mental health charities, military charities, and we'll pick a different one, whether it was Rock to Recovery, whether it was Mind, and some of them were homeless charities. And myself and my wife would pick a charity. We'd put our donation in each week. So if, because it was a weekly thing that we do, we'd pick a donation, say we're putting £25 in, that's done, we do our bit, get other people to put in, and then at the end of the week, like, there's a couple of £100 for that one. Choose a new charity, choose a new event. And through lockdown, it gave us something to do. It kept us all focused in. And like I said, you had these daily, weekly, monthly sort of goals to, it just kept you going. And before I knew it, it was kind of like everyone would say, what's your next challenge? What's your next goal? What's it? And it's like, oh my God. And I had this point where I did this 2 year and it was epic. I did so many records in that first year. I got to the second year, I turned 40, I beat a record on the same day. In that week, I think I did three or four records. And I left it a few weeks from there where I was training hard. I was going to go for the 5,000 metres, the 6,000 metres and the 10,000 metres and maybe the half an hour. So all of those were kind of like that sort of getting onto a middle distance, a middle time. So I was training to keep the right pace for all of them. And I was thinking, right, I'll get all of these done in the next month, training hard for them. And I went in the gym one morning and I looked, you know, for warm up. And then I'll do a quick sprint. I'll just do like a minute sprint. And then I'll see about, you know, getting into maybe trialing the first one, testing what I can do. Got on the machine for the ski erg. As I'm pulling down on the handles, I got about 30 seconds into a minute sprint. And I remember just dropping the handles and I had to sit down. My legs went completely numb. And I just felt like something had gone in my back. I was like, what the hell? So I'm sat there, legs trembling like mad, thinking, what is going on here? I was videoing all of it. So I went back and looked at the video and it was literally like 28 to 30 seconds in, sort of handles just gone. I sort of dropped down to the floor and it's just like, you could see on my face, I didn't even know what was going on. It's like, what is happening? I was seen by doctors and specialists afterwards. And I thought I had a spasm in my back. And as it happens, they say I had no back injury at all. Inside the socket here, so my leg sort of, if you think of where the rest of the leg would have been, sort of all my nerves are here, which would be for the foot.
Mm.
So if I wiggle my toes in my mind, I can still wiggle the tendons, which are down the shin. So I still feel the toes wiggling because my tendons are wiggling. If you look at your arm and as you wiggle your fingers, your wrist moving. So it's a similar sort of thing. So I'm wiggling my toes in my mind. But what was happening inside the socket, as I'm coming down with the handles and pressing, my stump was pressing into the socket. I didn't realise I was causing a bit of sort of scar tissue there, which was pressing into a nerve. And over time, building, going back and forth, and pressing into this nerve. And then it caused the nerve to fire off a signal to my brain. It comes back from the brain, which should go back to where it come from to say that hurts. Instead, it got confused and went to my back. So my stump and a phantom pain was causing my brain to say, you've got a back problem. And my back spasmed.
Yeah.
Once it's spasmed, you couldn't really stop it from spasming because once it's there, there it is, it's locked. And sort of like it hurts to unlock, hurts to do anything. So, I went and got some treatment. We went through a lot of different stretches and exercises. And afterwards, I was convinced I could do this again. But in the back of my mind, I thought, I don't want that to happen again.
So
I kind of eased off and thought, right, instead of pushing fitness to either throw up or pass out, you know, because that's pretty much every session was how far do you push yourself? I'd be in the gym. I'd push myself to my utmost limits. I'd be going blind while I'm training because you don't need your hearing, you don't need your sight, so that you're absolutely getting everything out of it. And vision's blurred, echoey, and then sort of you're about to pass out, but you're still going. I never did pass out and I never threw up, but at the same time, I was always at that point where you were about to.
At that verge.
It was awful. They were saying, some specialists were saying no real way of working out if you have a stroke or not because you're that close. I'm still trying and prolong my life, really, and being able to stay on the limb, off the wheelchair and, you know, do things. However, this year, myself and my wife, instead of going on a holiday, we've decided we're going to go to do a trek up the Andes Mountains to Machu Picchu.
Yeah.
So we've signed up with a charity challenge, and we've signed up to raise money for Limpower, who are a trying to work out what. So Limpower are an amputee charity who help amputees and people with limb difference. There's lots in the military where people in the military will get help through sort of military charities, and there's military help for prosthetics. But when you see the civilian side, if someone was born with a club foot, born with any problem that needed surgery, was in an accident, these people don't get the same sort of care as we do in the military. So what I see out there is lots of people say, oh, your legs, you know, your blade, this looks amazing. How do you get that? Or how are you able to do these different exercises? And it's hard to say, oh, we can do this because, well, actually, you've still got the same problems here. So this charity that I'm trying to help raise money with, they help kids and adults, people, amputees and people with limb difference, to get back into active sport, to stay active in their life. If they just need some sort of counselling, there's not that available for them. So this charity helps them out with advice and counselling. So I said straight away, I'm happy to help out. But what myself and my wife did, they wanted just to raise a certain amount so it pays for, say, your part on the trek. So we said, well, we'll fund our own part. So we've paid for the holiday side of things, if you want.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah.
Trekking into the mountains. So we've forked out that part. So every penny that we raise now is straight into the pot, that we don't have to raise funds each into it to pay that holiday. Everything goes into the pot for the charity. So, I mean, we're training at the moment, and it's in October when we're going up. It's something that I've always wanted to do. So I was saying to my wife, you know, it's something that I was already going to do at one point. So why not do it and raise money for charity? My wife looked at it online. She's scared of heights. She's not into this sort of thing at all. But as she looked into it online, she was like, I think I really want to do this with you. So now we're both doing it.
That's awesome.
It's going to be great.
No, that's really
I mean,
good.
Who doesn't want to go up Machu Picchu, the lost city of the Incas? It's like, wow.
Exactly.
And again, I haven't done any trekking since you know, having the leg off. I haven't done any big treks or anything like that. I walk the dog every day, and you know, I do active sports, but trekking for miles, hours upon hours, day after day, it's like, I'll see how I get on. I've been trying to ask advice on what leg should I use, because there's different legs for different things, activities. I've got some pretty Gucci legs just here beside me, actually.
Gucci legs, I like that. Wish I had some Gucci legs.
Yeah. just different things like rowing leg, where I can undo different parts of it. Don't even know if I've got you on camera there. So tighten it up. I've got a disc here that, as I spin it, it tightens, and it tightens this pieces in. Ankles that you can unlock. I can't even unlock it. I won't unlock that. It needs a, the best of the best.
Yeah.
And just pull this sock off it.
Yeah, you got to take the sock off. You'll get cold feet.
So it's got a 3D tattoo, where 3D, as in not like through glasses, but to feel it, it's textured.
Oh,
sort of,
fucking hell.
So on my leg.
Has it got hairs on it?
Yeah. So on my leg, I've got a tattoo here, which of a motorbike suspension.
Yeah.
So for me, this is my strong leg, and that's to show it's strong. So on the tattoo on the prosthetic leg, it's got the opposite, being it's a prosthetic leg, but it's got muscle.
Yeah.
And it's got the muscle fibers. And like you saw there,
I love the fact it's got the fake hairs. Yeah.
But not only that, look at that for toes.
He's got proper toes as well. Fucking hell.
It's just unbelievable.
So I'll ask the same questions I asked Mark Ormerod this as well. Have you ever felt the urge to paint the toenails or?
Yeah, I've just on most of them I've wanted to. I've never got around to it, to be honest. I mean, on them ones, the toenails, they look real, but they're silicone, so they're soft.
It does look like that's weird.
On most of
that's...
the feet, they have hideous looking feet, to be honest. Normally,
yeah, that is weird because how.
Oh,
it
is.
Looks.
It's freaky. But I mean, what happens with that one? Because it's rubber, it's silicone that's over the top of sort of the leg. So to have that sort of ultra HD on there, that makes it like another 2.5 kilograms heavier.
Yeah.
So when you're walking around, you imagine putting a shoe on that's 2.5 kilograms. It's it ends up being a bit of a weight on you. So it looks good, but then it's not very practical. Maybe for an event, maybe if you don't want to.
Is it one of those type of legs where you stick that on if you don't want people to come and ask you questions? Because it looks real.
You can do. I mean, I got it for two different reasons. One, because it's built like a leg. So instead of having sort of, you wear trousers and you've got like a flappy flagpole sort of where your trousers are just blowing off to one side.
Yeah.
So it feels that void in the trousers. So I got it for that reason. But then also I got it looking like a real leg for if you're wearing shorts and then you can just say you don't have to constantly draw attention to yourself. I do wear shorts near enough every day because it's just, like I keep doing there, clicking the leg off. It's easy. When you sat for too long, the liner that you wear to sort of attach you into the leg, it's still... And it's not breathable, and it's nipping your leg. It causes sort of friction burns. So when you sat down and it's all bunched up behind your knee and it's nipping you, you just feel like you need to get it off. But if you're wearing trousers, unless you've got really baggy trousers, you can't just pull your leg off. You've got to pull your trousers down, and now you've got to think if you're sat somewhere where you can't pull your trousers down, it just everything gets a bit awkward.
Well,
even if you just need to pull the liner up a little bit.
But you're a Marine; you can pull your trousers down whenever you want. It's like a part of the rules.
Well, that's it. I do, but you get told off.
No, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. And I think that's probably a good sort of place to sort of come to a close, really. Like you getting naked on the podcast. No, I'm joking. But but it's fascinating. It is fascinating. And I believe you're doing a wonderful job, as you said, raising as much money and awareness in a way for not just military amputees, but, you know, civvy amputees as well. Because, as you said, a lot of them get sort of forgotten about, and especially from yourself as well. Having an injury that made you lose your leg and it wasn't on active duty or active duty in the desert, you know, that you've basically got like a civilian injury, you could say, although you were being Ali in the Arctic or whatever. But no, but genuinely fantastic work with all the
That's charity
work
that
you're doing.
At any point, anybody else could, you know, do exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank
exactly.
You.
And yeah, and myself, I helped to raise money for Rock to Recovery. I organised football matches. I believe I was the first one to do that. Well, happy with that. So yeah, giving back is always something that I think. Well, I think everyone should give back a little bit. But yeah, appreciate you giving your time to sit and chat with me in the shed. You have
Not
a
a
lovely
problem.
coffee. But yeah,
Yeah, I got
genuinely.
myself a whole pot of coffee here.
Oh, fucking hell. Smashed it. You won't be sleeping. You won't be sleeping tonight, mate. You'll be buzzing. Nah, but genuinely, appreciate it.
Yeah.
Appreciate all your time. And I'll let you know when all this comes out. And I'll make sure that you get the links and all that sort of jazz. But yeah, genuinely, thank you very much for giving me your time.
I'll make sure I share them. No worries. You take care.
And you, mate. You stay safe.
Thanks.
Hello, you're at the adverts, so don't turn off because I've got some good stuff for you. First up, I'm going to talk about our sponsors. Kent CBD is our first sponsor. Now CBD oil, as you know, has tremendous benefits, especially within mental health and physical health. Personally, I use it to help with my anxiety and my depression, but not only that, I also use it to help with the aches and pains of life in my joints, especially my ankles and my knees. But yeah, without CBD oil, I would have still been on my antidepressant tablets, which I'm no longer on. So, you know, every cloud. And what we're going to do here at Granite Zero is we're going to give you 10% off everything from oil, muscle rub, jellies, bath salts, the lot. Yeah? Make sure you get in there. www.kentcbd.org. Put in the promo code Granite Zero and get yourself 10% off. You are welcome. But also, if you're like me and you love a nice cup of coffee. Now, for me, I only drink one coffee, and that's Green Beret coffee. Now, I don't only drink it because it's out of this world fucking coffee. Roast to order, grinded to whatever specific grind you want. But not only that, it's veteran-owned and veteran-run, which, you know, hits me right in the feels. So make sure you check it out, Green Beret Coffee. Get yourself a nice cup of coffee. I drink it dark, just like my soul. Incredible stuff, incredible stuff. And what I'm going to give for you, I'm going to give you 10% off. So once you get to the checkout, once you've got all your coffee, your products, your apparel, whatever you need, get to the checkout and put in the promo code GZPODCAST10 and get yourself 10% off, courtesy of the Granite Zero Podcast. You are welcome. Now, that's enough of me talking about this stuff. Back to the regular scheduled show. Check it out!